this academic year. So we're very pleased to have Bill Unruh here from University of British Columbia, and he will tell us about the VR perspective on firewalls. So I suppose he's sufficiently well known that I don't really need to introduce him. The stage is all yours.
Thank you. Yeah, so parts of this talk will be similar to the talk you heard in cosmology on Tuesday by Jim Bardeen. This seems to be a field that spans all areas. So I guess we just have to give it in condensed matter as well. So I'm going to talk a little bit about firewalls, try and tell you what they're all about, and go through some of the possibilities as to what they mean. So let's go back to Hawking's discovery that black holes radiate. And the way in which the calculation is done is that you take the quantum fluctuations here in the past, you propagate them forward in time, take the quantum modes, actually, which, anyway, propagate them forward in time. If you look at the null geodesics around the horizon, this black curve here is supposed to be the horizon of the black hole that's formed by the collapse of this green matter, which finally hits a singularity down here at r equals zero, r referring to the circumference divided by 2 pi of the spherically symmetric surfaces. Some of the light rays go out, some of them drop in. But there's this massive amplification of position that takes place, because if we look at light rays here that are separated by, let's say, 10 to the minus 5 seconds or so, which is the time scale of the black hole and is the time scale of the radiation that Hawking predicted would be emitted by a black hole, then that originates on scales of e to the roughly t divided by 4m, where t is the time since the black hole formed, and 4m is the mass of the black hole, evaluated in time units, which for a solar mass black hole may be roughly 10 to the minus 5 seconds. So this is a very, very big factor. For the solar mass black hole, after 1 second, that's e to the 10 to the fifth. And that's a nice number. Or actually, I have to e to the 10 to the sixth, I guess. Doesn't matter. That's a very nice number, because one of the things we don't have to worry about is units. Because whether I measure this in Planck scale, 10 to the minus 44 second units, or I measure it in ages of the universe, it makes only a trivial difference to that factor of 10 to the sixth. So it's the same answer no matter what units I use. That also suggests that there may be something strange going on. Outgoing modes travel roughly along the green lines. The positive frequency modes, which are the empty modes, if you will, the things corresponding to annihilation operators, depending on your choice of what you mean by frequency and so forth, correspond to the vacuum state. These are red and blue, these are red shifted into the future, blue shifted into the past. And once you take the Fourier transform of the modes that are coming out, you find that these modes, which originally were purely positive frequency, are mixtures of positive and negative frequency. All of that action seems to take place just near the horizon of the black hole, but not too near, probably around r equals 3m, as I'll argue later. One can do this kind of thing also in fluids. For example, if one has a waterfall where the water goes faster than the velocity of sound, that surface where the velocity of the water equals the velocity of sound is a horizon for sound waves and behaves in just the same way. Of course, in that case, you don't get these absurd factors of e to the 10 to the fifth, because we know we can't have wavelengths in water which are smaller than the interatomic spacing. So there's a natural cutoff in that case. But it turns out that even in fluids, one gets the same kind of feature, namely one gets a thermal spectrum of radiation given off by the horizon for the same kinds of reasons as here. For a fluid, the temperature is proportional to the rate of change of C minus V, C being the velocity of sound, V being the velocity of the fluid, just at the point where C equals V. For black holes, this is proportional to 1 over 8 pi m, the mass of the black hole. And the important thing is that the temperature is a function of the mass or the energy from which one can do elementary thermodynamics. Namely, if we imagine we've got a system with a temperature, then we expect that TdS equals dE will give us the entropy of the system. T depends on E or M, and we get an entropy that's 1/4 of the surface area. That all arises from that temperature. There's nothing in here about microphysics. Well, there was something there about microphysics. One did quantum field theory and the curve space-time, which is a microphysical theory. But this just pops out of there, and there's nothing about internal degrees of freedom of the black hole or anything like that. So black holes emit radiation with high entropy, even if the black hole was formed from a state with very low or zero entropy. So one of the questions that arose was, when the black hole finally evaporates, is the radiation that finally comes out, that whole collection, does that have high entropy? Or is it equal to the original entropy of formation, which could be zero if one formed the black hole from a pure state? This is a question which has been battled over now for 40 years almost. I guess it is 40 years. And people have various and sundry positions on this. I have one as well. Bob Wald and I used to say to each other that we were the only two people left. I said, sometimes it feels as though we're the only two people left. And he looked at me and said, no, Bill, you don't understand. We are the only two people left that believe that when the black hole finally evaporates, the entropy of the radiation that you get out is, you know, bigger than the surface area of the 1/4 of the surface area of the black hole. It's huge. It's the cumulative entropy of all that thermal radiation that came out. Most particle physicists and some general relativists believe that the fine-grained entropy should be conserved. Even Stephen Hawking changed his mind to the first camp. He was one of the ones that predicted the second. Yes?
There are three.
There are three? Oh, good. Well, actually, I'm beginning to detect a little current, a counter current. So more people seem to be accumulating on the on our side. But what I want to do today is to talk a little bit about what are the various possibilities. So this has been encoded in what's been called information loss. Black hole has a pure state, evaporates over 10 to the 63 years or something like that. The radiation is incoherent, high entropy thermal radiation. After the black hole is gone, what's left? Well, there have been various suggestions for this. One is that black holes simply don't form. And this has been something that keeps reappearing time after time after time by various and sundry people, usually talking about some kind of quantum effects stop the black hole from forming. Another is, so the thermal radiation in a sense comes about because there's this inaccessible region behind the horizon of the black hole. That's not quite true if you look at the derivation, but let's go with that. And if a horizon doesn't form, then there's no inaccessible region, and the pure state will remain pure.
Bill?
Yes?
Is there still an apparent horizon? If I assume they were...
No, they don't even want an apparent horizon. So they want no horizon whatsoever. So as a solar mass or a galaxy mass black hole collapses, something happens to stop the horizon from forming.
So that could be ruled out by current observations.
Well, let me give my talk before you give my talk for me. I don't think that's a sensible position to take. And let me say why, and then you can say why for yours. If we take Einstein's equations, g mu nu equals t mu nu, one can read those equations backwards. Usually one thinks about g mu nu, we solve for that when we know what t mu nu is. But we can also read this as t mu nu given some metric, some curvature. So we can, this has sometimes been called Schild's method of solving Einstein's equations. It's vastly easier than the usual method. Of course, the stress energy tensor that one gets that way may not be a very sensible one, but that's an engineering difficulty. And the thing is that the black hole, if one looks at the curvature in general around the black hole, we're far, far, far away from any quantum regime. Solar mass black hole, the radius of curvature is kilometers. Galactic-sized black hole, the radius of curvature is, the size of the Earth's orbit or something. It's huge. So there's nothing where, you know, in all approximations, we're very, very close to flat space-time. So we can ask, what was the, must the energy tensor be like in order that we have this collapsing matter come in to form a black hole and then suddenly not form a horizon, that something happens as the matter approaches the horizon and approaches something like the Planck scale away from the horizon, what do you have to have? Well, you've got, let's say, a solar mass collapsing towards the horizon. By that time, it's traveling at almost the velocity of light. And effectively, what you find when you look at the curvature is that that stress energy tensor basically has to stop. So that massive stress energy tensor, which has huge inward momentum fluxes, has to suddenly stop. Well, how can you stop it? The only way it can be stopped is if the stress energy tensor has absolutely huge stresses. A solar mass traveling at the velocity of light stopped within a Planck scale has to have huge stresses. They can't be radial stresses, because there's nothing to support that radial stress, the gradient of the radial pressure. They've got to be tangential stresses somehow that stop this thing. So these tangential stresses have to be, you know, e to the some very large power, bigger than the energy density in order to stop that thing from forming. Even if you convert the black hole completely into radiation which goes out, you find you have these humongous stresses, and in fact that radiation pushes back on the matter and causes it to collapse even faster. The velocity of sound in the interior has to be traveling far, far faster than the velocity of light, either d rho by dp or rho over p, whichever you want to take for the velocity of sound squared, is huge. Sorry, P over O. The other question is, this stuff is collapsing in, and just before it hits the horizon, it has to do this, all this stuff. But where's the horizon? Well, a horizon is the surface, the last surface out of which something could escape to infinity. And that demands that you know the whole future history. For example, what's the horizon now may not be the horizon if a whole bunch of extra matter falls in, because that extra matter is going to focus the light rays that are trying to escape and cause them to fall into the black hole. So where's the horizon? Surely this thing can't be teleological and know what the rest of the universe is going to behave like. Well, we have apparent horizons. The problem is apparent horizons are a dime a dozen. We've got millions of apparent horizons in this room right now. If one takes, this is space-time, this is time, this is space, this is a light cone, a past-traveling light cone from this point over here, and this is a light sheet. So this is, you know, a pulse of light traveling in the Z direction like that, a plane parallel pulse traveling in the Z direction. The intersection of those two guys is an apparent horizon. Both future traveling light rays, light cones, emitted by that surface, one of them goes down to a point and the others are parallel to each other. That's the definition of a trapped surface. So here we have a trapped surface in this room right now. How does the matter traveling in this room know that that trapped surface isn't the trapped surface of a black hole? Well, you say, well, this one, if you look at it, it actually goes off to infinity. It never closes. But how does the matter sitting right here know that the rest of this trapped surface isn't closing off? It would have to be highly non-local in space in order to figure out that way over there the thing is opening up rather than closing off. So it just doesn't make any sense that the matter wouldn't know where in the world to produce this weird quantum matter if it was the apparent horizon that triggered it. So I think the lesson I want you to take from this is black holes form. They don't, there isn't something that gets in the way of black holes forming. Now, Lee, did you have an extra thing you wanted to say?
That's fine.
Okay. Now, back in the 1980s, Peskin, Susskind, and Banks wrote a paper in which they argued black holes, when they evaporate, can't lose all of that information into the black hole. In other words, they can't convert a pure state into a mixed state at late times, because if you did so, you would violate energy conservation. And in particular, if you had a small black hole, or even a virtual black hole forming in this room due to the collision of a couple of virtual protons at 10 to the 19 GeV, which then evaporated on much less than the Planck scale, that would have energy conservation, which would be of the order of the Planck scale. Well, 10 to the minus 5 grams is a huge amount of energy. It's a few tons of TNT. And if in the middle of this room suddenly there were an excess amount of energy of the order of a few tons of TNT, we might have noticed it. Now, we might argue, of course, that there's a selection effect here. Those for whom that happened aren't around to tell us about it. But a few tons is not going to destroy everyone, so you might have some reports from elsewhere. If one looks, however, you find that one of the key assumptions is the so-called Markovian assumption, that the time evolution of the density matrix depends only on the value of the density matrix at the present instant, with S being independent of either the past or the future of the density matrix. This is the Markovian approximation. And this is a crucial feature in their derivation. The problem is that one can build simple models in which one can show that energy conservation and decoherence are unlinked. So here's a little model. I have two free particles, P1 and P2. Let's assume they've got the same mass. They travel in one dimension, one plus one dimensions towards each other, and they collide with a delta function potential. So they come and collide. Sometimes they don't collide and they go through each other. Sometimes they collide and they bounce off each other. In this particular case, this model is such that the strength of that delta function is proportional to some hidden variables, some hidden spin variables, S sub I, pointing in the Z direction, where Z is not a spatial direction, but just picking out one of the Pauli matrices. When they collide, of course, those spins see themselves in an effective magnetic field proportional to the value of this delta function when those two particles are colliding. And that causes them to rotate. So if we start off the spins with not in an SZ eigenstate, but in an SX or SY eigenstate, during that collision, they're going to rotate. And how much they rotate depends on the strength of that spin. After the collision, the two particles travel apart. There no longer is any interaction. The energy in the spins depends only when there is there only when there's an interaction, so they carry no energy. If we take account of everything, of course, this energy has to be conserved. But before the interaction, all of the energy was in the particles. After the interaction, all of the energy is in the particles. So if one looks at only the particles, energy is exactly conserved in this collision process. However, if one looks at the entropy of those particles, if one looks at the reduced density matrix of those particles, these internal rotations of the spin are no longer necessarily orthogonal to each other, and they decohere the system. So if those two particles came and passed through each other, there's a different rotation than if those two particles bounced off each other. And you get a decoherence in those two part in that two-particle collision. Notice that because this depends on x1 minus x2, momentum is exactly conserved. And this is all time independent, energy is exactly conserved. And all of the energy is in the particles, so the particles' energy is exactly conserved. What happens, of course, is during the course of this collision, one has time dependence because those spins, internal spins, are rotating, and this system is not a Markovian process. It depends on the history of those internal degrees of freedom, which is not taken into account in the Markovian approximation. I was just re-saying what I've just said. So the lesson to take from this is that energy conservation and decoherence are consistent with each other. There are certain cases, of course, the Caldera and Leggett oscillator bath models, in which there is a relationship between the energy that goes into the environment and the decoherence caused by that environment. But there are other systems. The spin bath model, which Philip Stamp and Nicholas Prokofiev developed in the late 90s, in which there's no such relationship. In NMR, there's the T1 process and the T2 process, which correspond to decoherence and energy loss. And it is well known that those two are sometimes related to each other, but often they aren't related to each other. So there's no reason to believe in black holes that energy conservation and decoherence have anything to do with each other. The big, you know, it's like one of these little games. You shoot down one target and they pop up again. Whack-a-mole, they pop up again over there. So the latest is, well, it's pretty old by now, ADS-CFD. This one is more difficult, but if we look, we assume that my space-time is anti-de Sitter space near infinity, i.e. it has a metric that looks something like this, where this is a spherically symmetric, this is the metric on a sphere in some dimensions, like six dimensions or whatever. This is, in this case, this is a five-dimensional space-time with an internal six-dimensional space, which is sort of one of the favorite models, but there are many other possibilities. One of the things of anti-de Sitter space is that if you take a massless particle, it can get to infinity in a finite time. The integral of dr over this thing, which tells you how long it takes to get to infinity, is a finite number. And the hypothesis is that if the space-time has this anti-de Sitter symmetry near infinity, then on the boundary at infinity, since the boundary is a finite time away, one can define a boundary at infinity, one can define a conformal Yang-Mill supersymmetric theory on that four-dimensional or whatever dimensional boundary, and that is in some sense or another equivalent quantum mechanically to quantum gravity theories in the interior. Problem is, it's not entirely clear what this means. But the argument goes that, look, this boundary theory, a Yang-Mills theory, is surely unitary. And therefore, whatever goes on inside, since there's a mapping between the two of them, must be unitary as well. There are a lot of questions. Can the boundaries actually see inside the black hole interior? If one has an Einstein-Rosen bridge, for example, then one knows that you can't simply use the boundary out at one of the infinities. In order to describe the system, you have to have two infinities to describe the quantum mechanics of the system, etc. What all of this tells us is that the mapping is almost certainly non-local in time. So here I've tried to draw, this is supposed to be r equals zero. There's a black hole that formed here with a singularity or whatever happens, and then it evaporates and leaves back behind something like another anti-de Sitter space. This is the boundary theory. And there's supposed to be some sort of mapping from the boundary theory into the interior. The problem is that there's absolutely no way in which that boundary theory knows which space-like slice I'm supposed to be choosing in order to define that mapping from the boundary into the interior. And so it seems that the only thing that this boundary theory can map onto are things which are independent of which hypersurface one chooses in the interior, whether one chooses that hypersurface or this one in the interior. It can't depend on those things. It can't care which one of those hypersurfaces I choose. I.e., what that suggests is that the mapping is not from from the CFT theory on the boundary into an arbitrary gravitational theory in the inside, but onto the constants of the motion, things which are independent of which time-like hypersurface I choose in the interior. Now, we know in quantum gravity, in the standard arguments one has made for quantum gravity, for example, for a closed universe, where it seems that the only degrees of freedom are the constants of the motion, that that can't be the right answer. We're interested in the things that change, not in the things that just stay the same. Things that stay the same can be useful for calculating those things that change. Here it seems that all we can look at are the things that stay the same. Something wrong there. And this also suggests that this mapping from here into the interior must be very non-local in time, because it doesn't care which one of these space-like hypersurfaces one chooses. Okay, that's open. I don't know what to make of ADS-CFT. And whether my comments are sensible or not, I'm not sure. But let's get to firewall. Let's first do a very simple little model. What I have is flat space-time here, 1 plus 1-dimensional flat space-time. And at some point in time, this is time running this way, I stick in a mirror. I switch on a mirror instantaneously here. These things are supposed to represent the quantum field, the degrees of freedom of the quantum field that travel in the space-time. And if it's a massless scalar field, they're independent left and right movers. In the vacuum, if one looks in the vacuum for correlations, there are no correlations between the left movers and the right movers. There are correlations of the right movers with each other, but there are none of the left with the right. There's no entanglement of the left with the right. Now let's look at this mirror just at this point. Just before that point, all of these modes, these left-moving modes, are simply going to whip past the mirror that doesn't exist and travel out this way. Just after the mirror gets switched on, however, what's coming out is not these left modes, but is a reflection off the mirror of these right-going modes, which get reflected back in this direction. Now, with that mirror there, there's no way to tell the difference between what's going on in this regime, where we've got left movers and right movers. Sorry, left movers and right movers. There's no way of telling the difference in that regime between this state and a vacuum state. All local measurements that I make in this regime see the vacuum state. All local measurements I make down here see the vacuum state. But if I look for entanglement across this horizon, it's zero. And in particular, the correlation function of a point, you know, the two-point correlation function of a point here to a point here is zero. So we've got some correlation function here, and we've got nothing as we cross that horizon. If one now looks at the stress energy tensor for this situation, one finds that that lack of correlation, I could define the stress energy tensor in various ways, point splitting or whatever you want, but now the correlation function has a delta function singularity, a step function singularity at u equals delta. When I take these derivatives, I'm going to get a delta function squared kind of singularity, i.e. it's not even integrable. So there's this infinite flux of energy. Even when one integrates it, you get an infinite flux of energy traveling along that null surface just where you switched on the mirror. Where does that come from? Remember, the state on both sides is the vacuum. There's no measurements I can do that distinguish them from the vacuum. They're just exactly the vacuum state. And yet, just at that border, I'm getting an infinite amount of energy. That comes about because I broke the correlations that should exist in the vacuum across that surface. So the left goers and the right goers are uncorrelated with each other, whereas the right goers and the right goers that would have been there without the mirror were entangled, were correlated with each other. And by breaking that correlation, I've gotten this infinite amount of energy whipping along that null surface. That's a firewall. It's an infinite amount or a large amount of energy that's created not by some physics, well, it's certainly physics, but simply by breaking the entanglement that should exist in the vacuum. By breaking those entanglements, one that costs a huge amount of energy. One can also look at permeable mirrors, and again, if you switch them on suddenly, you get a very large amount of energy. There was a fun little problem that I did. I don't know if I talked about this. This is the accelerating sponge. If you take a sponge and you accelerate it, well, we know that an accelerated observer sees himself surrounded by a thermal state. And a sponge is for mopping up messes. And we know that a thermal state is the messiest system one can possibly have. And therefore, the sponge can try and mop up the mess. And one can build a little model of this sponge where you have the scalar field that I'm going to want to mop up is modeled by phi, a massless scalar field in 1+1 dimension. The internal sponge pockets, if this is a piece of Bounty, for example, which has those wonderful sponge pockets which mop up the messes, is modeled by this another scalar field psi, which doesn't live in space-time, but lives in some internal dimension into which all of this mess is going to be hidden. And one can build up a little equations of motion like this and solve this problem exactly. And what one finds is that the stress energy tensor of that system, as the sponge is accelerated, it mops up this thermal radiation that it sees around itself. But of course, the energy of that thermal radiation is needed in order to make a zero energy momentum tensor for the normal Minkowski vacuum. This is just a normal Minkowski space, and I start off with the normal Minkowski vacuum. If I mop up some of these acceleration particles, that's going to decrease the energy of the system, and I get the emission of negative energy coming out of this sponge as long as the sponge doesn't fill up. Of course, in order to switch on the mirror, there turns out to be a large pulse of positive energy that comes out just at that initial switch on, such that for any geodesic observer, he first sees this large pulse of positive energy, then he sees this negative energy, but the mirror is moving away from him more and more rapidly, which means that that negative energy is redshifted and gets less and less important, and the total amount of energy that he sees traveling along this geodesic is perfectly finite. But for an accelerated observer who accelerates with that mirror or with that sponge, he sees this constant flux of negative energy being given off by the sponge. Again, this is coming about because of loss of coherence, because now it turns out that the field traveling out from this sponge is composed not only of the phi field, but also of these internal degrees of freedom, which were converted by the mirror into outgoing radiation. And that, of course, had zero correlations with the phi field. And so again, you've broken correlations in your phi field, and that produced this large pulse of positive energy here. So finally, we get to the firewall argument. It's a simple argument. Here we've got a black hole, and this is supposed to be the horizon. It's formed from some pure state. This thing emits radiation for a long time. And let's roughly divide it up into early radiation and the late radiation. Now, if the system is going to preserve, be such that finally the total entropy of the system is equal to zero, this looks like thermal radiation. The only way you can get something whose entropy is zero with a bunch of thermal radiation here is if there's very strong entanglement, in fact, perfect entanglement, between stuff here and stuff here. So this stuff has to be entangled with the stuff that's coming out later. But remember, across the horizon of the black hole, there's stuff that gets generated on the inside, just like on the outside, which falls into the singularity. These are the so-called partner modes. In order not to have one of those firewalls caused by the destruction of entanglement, one needs entanglement between outside and inside. Because if one breaks that entanglement, one gets these huge fluxes of energy. Unfortunately, the unitarity of quantum mechanics says you cannot be entangled with two things at the same time. So A cannot be entangled with B and be entangled with C at the same time. So if you believe that the radiation, as it ultimately comes out, is in a pure state, then you cannot have any entanglement between A and C, and therefore you get one of these sheets of stress energy traveling along the horizon, which will destroy anybody that happens to be silly enough to fall into the black hole before it gets destroyed in the central singularity. After all, if you fall into a black hole that's sufficiently large, it could take you many, many years in order to hit the middle singularity, but this would destroy you far beyond, you know, your life would be shortened. This just doesn't seem right. So how can one get out of this? Well, of course, the firewall arises from the assumption that A and B were entangled, that the final state coming out was a pure state. The easiest way out is to simply say that's wrong. The strong entanglement between A and C, but there's none between A and B. In other words, when the black hole finally evaporates, it produces a huge amount of energy in that entropy in that evaporation process. There's nothing unphysical about this. This arises out of a solution of the field equations. And the field equations are unitary in every sense that we believe in. It's just that we've got some place of hiding the information, namely in the central singularity. The stuff falls into the black hole, it hits the central singularity, it's now fallen off the edge of the universe, and that's it. So the entropy generated here is of exactly the same kind as if you were in a room here, and we're not, in which light could go out through a window, you will never capture that light again. You can't ever catch up to it. So you have lost whatever information or entanglement that existed in that photon, and therefore the evolution of physics inside this room is non-unitary. Does that cause anybody sleepless nights? The answer is no. On the other hand, they will then say something like, but God knows that that photon is entangled with the stuff inside the room, so it's okay. It's being one of the very few instances in which God is called upon to rescue physics. I don't see any difference between that situation and the situation in which stuff falls into the central singularity of the black hole. So that, for me, is by far the easiest resolution. But let's not just do easy stuff, let's try some other stuff. We heard on Monday about another suggestion. A could be entangled with both B and C if B is the same as C. Right? If C is right, really the same stuff as B coming out, then there's no problem. In other words, if the radiation that comes out of the system, ultimately some of it, or all of C eventually becomes B, that could solve the problem as well. And, you know, going all the way back to Frolov and Novikov, I guess, and then Mardin in the late 90s, and Hayward in the mid-2020s, and in his talk and his paper that he published just recently, suggested a model that looks something like this. This is one of the original ones. In the new model, here R0 is a constant. The new model has R0 growing. But what you basically get, so this is the model that I'm suggesting, is that ds squared is basically a couple of Vida metrics. If one goes outside, far outside the black hole, bigger than roughly R equals 3m, then what we get is a Vida metric of positive energy going out to infinity. If one looks at R less than 3m, one again has a Vida metric, but in this case it's of negative energy going into the black hole. If one looks at the expectation value of the stress energy tensor near the horizon of a black hole, one finds that it looks like negative energy going into the black hole, into the horizon of the black hole, and that negative energy is in fact what shrinks the mass of the black hole. Now, in this, that of course, you would say, wait, you can't conserve energy this way. You know, stuff, energy, positive energy flowing that way, negative energy here, the energy is conserved, but certainly the momentum isn't where they come together. Well, we have the conformal anomaly. In fact, Paul Davies, Steve Fulling, and I showed way back in the 70s that if you take the conformal anomaly into account, this is roughly the kind of model that you get. Very crudely, there isn't a sudden transition at R equals 3m. It's a continuous transition. The conformal anomaly gets bigger as you go into the black hole. But let's just model it by this delta function origin for the particles at R equals, of the energy at R equals 3m. The ingoing metric I'm going to assume is, looks just like a Vida metric, except when we get very near the center, where R0 is something like the Planck scale, then this turns into De Sitter universe. M cancels out, and we just get 1 minus R squared over R0 squared, which is a De Sitter universe, where R0 is the past horizon in the static frame of the De Sitter universe. Interestingly, this metric is such that you get this null ingoing flux of radiation, which then smoothly turns into a static De Sitter universe. So when we're near R equals R0, I don't see any of this negative energy radiation coming in. It's just smoothly converted over into an interior De Sitter universe. This is a diagram. This is supposed to be R, the radius. V is I've slanted the V equals constant hypersurface in this direction. And so we get a positive flux going to infinity, a negative flux going in, which gradually over 10 to the 53rd years or 10 to the 63rd years evaporates the black hole. But we now have 2 apparent horizons, this past horizon of the De Sitter universe and the usual apparent horizon of the black hole. As the black hole evaporates, eventually this horizon will merge with that one and disappear entirely. If we look at outgoing radiation, we find that outgoing radiation on the inside comes up here and gets plastered very close to this apparent horizon for a very long time. Outgoing radiation traveling in this direction, you say, wait, that's ingoing, isn't it? Well, the problem with the metric on the inside of a black hole is that you have this ingoing radiation, the radiation which is moving outwards faster than this is moving outwards, is also attracted inwards, and it also plasters itself against this horizon. Eventually, they escape. Notice that the energies just smoothly go over into a De Sitter. But these partner modes, which correspond to these outgoing waves inside this apparent horizon, seem to get plastered up against this inner apparent horizon. Now the radiation out here is coherent with the stuff in here, and we get no firewall. But eventually all of the information in those partners escapes out to infinity. And you say, but wait a minute, there's a huge amount of information there. Surely when it escapes out to infinity, it's carrying a large amount of energy with it. In fact, if you do sort of crude estimates, you find that far more energy is carried out. Remember, also the energy density goes to basically infinity, e to the 10 to the 53rd. I mean, a huge, humongous number. plastered against this inner horizon. But there's a little model that Ralph and Masahiro Hota at Sendai, he was the one that discovered energy teleportation, and I are working on right now. This is a model that was developed way back in the 70s already to mimic thermal radiation by having an accelerated mirror, a mirror whose acceleration exponentially increases. You find then that in this region in which that acceleration exponentially increases, you get a thermal flux of radiation that looks just like Hawking radiation. If you eventually stop this acceleration, then the radiation coming in here is just the vacuum. Now, this is a situation in which clearly the stuff that comes in from the past all goes out to the future. So information is preserved. But what's going out to the future up here is vacuum. So where is the information that corresponds to the correlations with all this thermal junk that came out here, which has high entropy? The answer is that that correlation is with vacuum fluctuations. In other words, these particles here have partner particles that are basically just part of the vacuum over here. So when you look at the fluctuations in this radiation here, the thermal radiation, the correlations that that thermal radiation has in order that the total state be pure is not with some energy traveling out, but with vacuum fluctuations traveling out. It's a bizarre system that somehow or other the vacuum fluctuations themselves can be a sink of information. You say, how in the world is that possible? Well, remember that if you take a vacuum and you put a hard-walled box in here, or not a hard-walled box, you just carve off this section of the space-time from that, that the entanglement entropy there is infinite. So there's loads and loads and loads of entanglement that can encode this entanglement between this radiation and that vacuum on the other side. So this suggests, it certainly doesn't prove anything, that maybe that Bardeen radiation that escapes in those last instances doesn't have to carry any energy. It can just be vacuum fluctuations that correlate with all of those thermal photons that are released in the black hole evaporation process. Is this a good model? I don't know. It seems to correspond to what Stephen Hawking has been talking about. I mean, what he's been talking about has been is sufficiently cryptic that it's very difficult to figure out exactly what he's saying. But it seems to be sort of roughly similar. He gave a 10-minute talk at the Fuzzball and Firewall conference in Santa Barbara a year ago, which was suggestive that this is the kind of thing he had in mind, but there was nothing specific whatsoever in his talk. He's apparently written a paper, which I haven't managed to read yet. But as far as I can understand, it's very similar to his talk. Is that right?
Yeah, it's basically the same as the talk.
There are lots of other questions. Where are the particles created? Well, as I said in that little model, and coming from dumb hole models, these sonic analogs suggest that the particles seem to be created well outside the horizon, somewhere around R equals 3m. One can build a little model like this in flat space-time. So I've got a metric here, which is just flat space-time in Rindler coordinates for x less than 1. For x greater than 1, I have flat space in ordinary coordinates. And at x equals 1, I have a little mirror, not a mirror, a little potential barrier that the field psi can bounce off of. What this model does for you is obviously in the interior, I have just flat space-time. Here I've just got flat space-time and accelerated coordinates, so it looks like there's a whole bunch of thermal radiation there, but of course that's there because of the acceleration. It's not really, it doesn't carry any energy or anything like that. Outside, it's just ordinary flat space-time. And what I'm going to get is that some of the fluctuations from inside are going to get through this potential and go out. So if I look at this, some of the thermal particles that I get on the inside leak out towards infinity. They carry positive energy, of course. Well, since those particles are no longer there in order to cancel in order to give you the zero energy in Minkowski spacetime, which the vacuum state and Rindler coordinates would have, they carry out positive energy. What must go back into the black hole must be negative energy. So we get at exactly the situation that we get for black holes, namely a positive energy flux out to infinity in flat spacetime, and a negative energy flux in through the Rindler horizon, the future Rindler horizon, in flat spacetime. So this x, obviously x equals constant from inside, looks like an accelerated potential barrier, just as the angular momentum barrier in a Schwarzschild black hole from near the black hole looks like an accelerated potential barrier. From far away, of course, it looks like something that just sits there, just as from far away, this potential barrier looks like it's just sitting at a constant place in Minkowski space. So this is a little model in flat space-time, which seems to have all of the features that black hole evaporation radiation has. And here, obviously, those particles are being created just at that potential barrier at x equals 1. This suggests that the particles are created by those potential barriers outside the black hole. This is my last transparency, which is good because I'm already 10 minutes over time. I apologize. Black holes still manage to surprise us and make us think and realize we don't know very much. Is the firewall argument reasonable? Certainly, I don't think firewalls are reasonable, but is even the argument itself, that entanglement over 10 to the 53rd years or 10 to the 63rd years in the black hole is a reasonable thing to talk about, is unclear. What do we make of ADS CFT? Is the naive interpretation really what is true about it? Can it see behind the horizon? And if it can't see behind the horizon, then how in the world does it know about the information that's there? And if it can, how in the world does it see behind the horizon? Does it simply refer to those degrees of freedom that are diffeomorphism invariant, i.e. constants of the motion? If it just sees constants of the motion, well, black hole evaporation ain't a constant of the motion. There's something happening that we're trying to describe. Can all the information inside the black hole be carried out by the vacuum fluctuations after the black hole has disappeared? It's almost as weird as assuming that all of that information piles up on that inner apparent horizon and gets squeezed down to distant scales of, you know, exponentially small distance scales. Both of them seem pretty unlikely. Of course, for black holes, we know that if we take the time inverse of a black hole evaporation, there we get thermal particles coming in, both from inside and outside, which combine together to simply give you the vacuum state near the horizon. So it's not impossible that stuff piling up near a horizon can leave behind simply the vacuum state. That's what happens in the time inverse of a black hole. That, of course, depends on the subtle correlations between the stuff from inside and outside. But after all, on the inside of a black hole, stuff got right to R equals zero and then bounced out to the apparent horizon, and other stuff came up to the apparent horizon. Are there correlations between that ingoing radiation and that stuff that basically produce a vacuum state along that apparent horizon rather than a horrible mess? Or is there a singularity at the center of the black hole, and that's where everything drops off? Now, one of the assumptions people often make is, well, look, quantum gravity, we don't like singularities. Quantum gravity is going to save our bacon. Well, I'm really worried about that, because what tends to happen, I mean, if we look at the history of physics, in 1900, we had all of those paradoxes and the things that were just going wrong in physics, and quantum mechanics did save us, but it saved us with a theory that was so weird we're still arguing about it 100 and some odd years later. If quantum gravity is going to solve the singularity, it's probably going to replace it with something that's so weird that we will hope, that we will wish we were back in the case where we just have to worry about singularity. prejudice that quantum gravity will make things nice. Oh, this is what I just said. So there's no evidence that quantum mechanics will rescue us rather than make our bewilderment worse. The attitude of many reminds me a bit of William Westmoreland in Vietnam. We all, those of us of a certain age, most of this doesn't apply to most of you, remember the TV screen of William Westmoreland standing in front of one of these South Vietnamese villages, which was completely reduced to rubble, you know, a few bodies lying around and so forth. And he explained to the television viewers that, yes, there was all this damage, but we had to destroy the village in order to save it. And much of the reaction that has come to the black hole information paradox, this so-called non-unitarity, which I think is a red herring, but anyway, the so-called non-unitarity of black hole evaporation, reminds me of that, because they have to destroy quantum mechanics in order to say, you know, they have to destroy unitarity in order to save unitarity, which doesn't, makes me feel uncomfortable. Doesn't mean it's not right, just as William Westmoreland's arguments had some rational component to them, but they sure sounded weird. At this point, I think I'll quit. I'm sorry I went over time.
Any questions?
Yes.
So I've never understood, and I have to agree with you, I've never understood why a very attractive solution isn't that there is a baby universe, which is not so bizarre, and it is where the information goes, and end of story, it's not.
Right.
And with respect to the ADS-CFT, there's an issue that I've also never understood, which is that if you put the Yang-Mills theory on the boundary in the thermal state, it will have a causal specific heat, because partition functions for ordinary physical systems always have causal specific heat. But the black hole, if it's small enough in the ADS space, I think negative specific heat.
Yeah, I can't really make any comments on that. Assuming when you can get a big enough, you get a big enough black hole, but then I guess the temperature is low enough.
Yeah.
You would then expect to have a positive specific heat. But that has to be almost the same radius as the whole ADS space-time. So, I share some of these may simply be my ignorance. That's always the thing that makes one uncomfortable, especially with something like ADS-CFT, which I have tried upon occasion to understand and always gotten lost on page two. And so it's very difficult for me to sort of figure out exactly what's going wrong there. But my gut feeling is that somehow or other there's something that's not right there. But I have no real idea. I can't point to anything and say, look, there's a sign error here. Everybody's made the same sign error. I doubt that that's true. They're much better. People working there are much better calculators than I can ever hope to be. Yes?
So in your mirror model for the, you know, having the energy, you can get all the information out at the end without any energy, sort of.
Very much energy, yes.
At least not very much energy. So that's sort of modeling evaporation of black hole down this close to the Planck scale, right? And then saying that still trapping a lot of information, but then the information come out without pretty much energy because it's out in vacuum.
What I'm saying is that that may be a possibility. I mean, in this model, there seems to be something like that happening. So that may be a possibility in the black hole case. There's got to be a lot of sort of miracles going on in order for that to happen. But my problem is I have no idea what quantum gravity is going to tell us. And, you know, all I can do is look at some possibilities. And I don't think that this is a possibility that one can simply ignore. On the other hand, that model of information retention is not my favorite model. I think it just gets lost in the singularity, and that's the end of the story. Or if you want to be very conservative, say that there's little baby universes that you can stick it into. People have tried to make arguments to me about baby universes and arguing that the baby universes, if you make lots of black holes in those baby universes, you effectively measure the quantum state of them, and therefore they become ineffective as repositories for the information or something like that, this seems to be a very flat space-time kind of model that they have in mind with these little baby universes sitting at each point in space, like my spins in the inside of the black hole, where, again, if you did that experiment, particle collision experiment many, many times, you could start figuring out what the states were of those internal spins. Well, I don't believe that if there are universes, there are these sort of pre-existent entities that are sitting there. There's something that new that comes into being with every black hole that gets formed, not something that's already there that you can just dump information into. Yes.
Well, another issue with baby universes is that I don't know how you form them without Cauchy horizons. And if you have a Cauchy horizon, then you're losing predictability. So if you believe that you need to maintain predictability, at least, even if the information is lost from the outside universe or the old universe, then there is some issue there.
Sure. But then you know, this is all Planck scale physics, so it's quantum gravity, so these horizons, Cauchy horizons, etc., I don't know what's going on, but they act in such a way that they act very sort of thick and dump information there without trouble. One feels like there's very, very rapid hand flapping going on. It's a possibility, though. You know, I mean, and what we're exploring are possibilities. What I don't like is when somebody comes and tells me that this is the way it is. You know, I have suddenly had a revelation, and these are the tablets of the interior of the black hole. I just don't believe that. On the other hand, you know, figuring out what are some of the possibilities we can look at, I think is great. And it's fascinating that we can, you know, on physics derived from this little, you know, rooms like this, can actually go ahead and apply it to questions like this, where we're talking about 10 to the 53rd ages of the universe or whatever, is mind-boggling.
Questions. not, then let's thank the speaker again.